everybody. Welcome back. It is Monday, December 25th, 2023. Ho, ho, ho. And you are listening to episode 178 of the Midnight Film Society podcast. I'm your host, Damian Sherman. Joining me today is...
Derek McDuff.
On Christmas Day, my true love gave to me the last regular show of the year. Derek and I will discuss what we've been watching to prepare for the Best of the Year podcast. Poor Things, Running in the Sun, Eileen, and much, much more. After that, we will count down the top five Christmas movies. Will controversial picks like Die Hard, Gremlins, or Eyes Wide Shut make our lists? Listen and find out. Write you to the show, midnightfilmsociety@gmail.com, Bicycle on Twitter. So if you're on Pocket Cast, Google Podcast, Spotify, rate and review it on Apple Podcasts. Tell a friend, family member, or stranger. Sir, how you doing 2 days before Christmas?
I am exhausted. I have been working, as I was telling you before we recorded. My day job is in retail, which is usually a pretty chill, easy job that gives me time to work on podcasts and writing and stuff like that. But the last week or so before Christmas, it just becomes just a real slog. So
yeah.
But I'm off. We're recording this a couple days before you're hearing it. But so I'm
couple
off.
Days. Yeah.
For the next couple days, I'm gonna enjoy Christmas with the fam. So I'm excited about that.
Nice, very cool. Yeah, it's Joe Biden's economy is booming, baby. Got people coming in last minute. Got that retail thing going. Yep, I do not miss retail. I think I mentioned it a few times. I'm basically in manufacturing, so it's like we make a thing, people don't need it. We shut down pretty regularly, all the time during the holidays. So my last couple of days just been hanging out with the fam. Just mentioned that being in the Berkshires, you get the theaters around here, the festivals around here, people will, you'll see a celebrity once or twice, but obviously Derek being in California had to one-up me, be like, hey, we get the celebrities here all the
time.
Well,
you were like, wow, we have celebrities around
here.
Yeah,
celebrity sightings.
Like, yeah, dude, I live in Southern California.
We're talking about...
Snoop Dogg laughed at my dad.
He did. Talking about Mr. Bradley Coops. He was at the WTF, the Williamstown Theater Festival, way back in the day. So we spotted him before he was even a thing. He'd probably done... it's the movie Wet Hot American Summer. He'd probably done that already. But yeah, just kind of cool seeing the big times, the big time celebs, big time actors before they were a thing, when they were a little seedling before they sprouted. It is always interesting to see them as that.
The wee baby. Bradley, yeah, the wee Cooper.
Yes, the wee Coops, the little Coops, as we call him.
little Coops.
So let's get out of the show. Rips in peace, Mr. Andre Brower, one of the big ones of the year. At the end of the year, he was only 61, so quite young to pass away. Obviously known most recently as his on the television show Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I believe you are a watcher of that show, correct?
I love that show. One of my absolute favorite shows, and he is incredible in it. It's in the same vein as like Airplane or something. He's just this very dramatic, straightforward actor, and you put him on this, ridiculous farcical show, and he's so good because he's like doing this comedy, saying these ridiculous things, but playing it so straight. He's awesome. He's awesome in that. As well as a number of other things, of course.
Yeah, just looking up his filmography, had a role in Glory, one of, talking about actors' mm-hmm. early roles, early Denzel Washington. I think Cary Elwes was already somewhat established in 89, but early Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, that was after Princess Bride, yeah.
Was it after that? Okay, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
So he had a part in that in 1989, had a part in Primal Fear, which is one of the big... Twist movies, one of the early Twist movies. He had a small role in that as Tommy Goodman. And then the first thing I probably saw him in was in 1998's City of Angels, playing Cassiel, one of the angels in that movie. I don't know if you have seen that movie or remember him in it.
I have not seen that one. No.
Yeah, it's the movie with the, of course, the Google Dolls breakout hit, Iris.
Of course.
I don't want the world to see me.
From that movie?
That is from that movie. Yes, they wrote that. Wrote that song for that movie. Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Their big
I've
break.
Heard that song a lot of times.
Yes.
Okay.
last starring film role, I should say, was in last year's She Said, which I'm not sure. I believe you said you might catch up with that at some point. I'm not sure if you did yet or not.
Yeah. I meant to, never got around to it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I believe he was one of the executive editors of the New York Times there. So, yeah, rest in peace, Andre Brower. Also, Ryan O'Neill passed away this week. I just caught up with his, you know, big movie he was in, the Paper Moon, back in the 70s with his daughter that he lost out. I think he lost out Best Supporting Actor for somebody else. But, yeah. One of the greats, I guess. Probably pretty problematic, I would assume. I remember telling you the story about it, what happened after he lost the supporting actor that year.
Yeah. Yep. And well, he played Barry Lyndon, and he was just basically being himself.
Yeah.
Not to speak ill of the dead, but he just kind of was like, there's a reason Kubrick was like, hey, yeah, this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you heard stories about that, the production of that. They seemed to very much, Kubrick seemed to very much not get along with O'Neill, probably for good reasons at that point. Yeah, so I guess rest in peace him, but rest in peace.
I don't think it's that far.
No, jeez. Not that far? Okay, all right, rest in peace,
like
I guess.
It's not like we need to like either like, oh, this guy was great, or like this guy was responsible for Agent Orange and war crimes. There's...
You never know.
There's, you know, subtlety. You
never know. Yeah, sure. No, okay. I'm kidding. Rest in peace, both Andrea Brower and Ryan O'Neill this week. And we're creeping closer to the Oscars. I believe next year will be in March, right? I think they moved it back to March, which was the traditional month of the Oscars, right?
Yeah, I know that's when it used to take place. I know with the COVID and everything, they got all changed. And then with the Olympics, they also changed it so that it wouldn't be airing the same time as the Olympics. So COVID. Well, I guess there's still COVID, but like the pandemic is died down. The Olympics are not happening this year. So
So far, it looks like it's going to be March 10th, 2024 next year, which is still, you know, we say this all the time, but like, you know, the Oscar races, the presidential races, they're just too long. It's just like, man, just announce your thing, tell me your platform, then we'll go from there. Just like for a month or two, it's fine. I know what you stand for, and just let me fucking vote. Don't make this a 18th month affair. And it's the same thing with this, where you pretty much had a lock. Let's say, I don't know, to be fair, what, like late November, probably you probably had the movies out there. You had them. You had the actors out there. Well, with the strike, I understand it's different, but generally, you know, late November, early December, you kind of know who's going to be up for what, right? They were a pretty good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, that's when the award season really starts kicking in and the critics start making their lists and, you know, the first few nominations come in. Yeah.
So we have we have the Academy's shortlist here. Just a couple things. I didn't really go over the list too much as I usually do. I don't fact check or spot check my stuff before clicking it on the show here. But just trusting what the author of this article says. They say, in advance of the Academy Awards official nomination on the 23rd, they unveiled a number of shortlists. They said a few surprises. Barbie and Priscilla both did not make the cut for makeup or hairstyling, while controversial styling choices from Maestro and Golda did. In general, though, the lists are full of all the heavy hitters we expected to see, even if major categories like Best Picture and Lead and Supporting Actor are still a mystery. Barbie, Oppenheimer, Killers of the Flower Moon, and Poor Things all show up in multiple categories, as well as the United Kingdom international feature film entry Zone of Interest and Spanish entry Society of the Snow, which is the first time I've ever laid eyes on that name of that movie. I don't know if that's the first time you're hearing of that movie as well.
I feel like I've heard that said somewhere, but I think it was in the context of like, this is going to be a foreign Best Picture nom.
Yeah. Like, so
I don't know anything about it.
Yeah. Visual effects, which is, you know, the somewhat CGI stuff, but it can also be just, you know, practical effects as well. The creator, Garth Evans. I always mix up
Garth Edwards.
Garth Edwards. I always want to say Evans or the creator is in
Garth
there.
Brooks.
Garth Brooks, exactly. Godzilla Minus One is in there. I'll go for that. Yeah, that's good. Guardians 3. Yeah, especially that.
This is just the short list. Like, it's like,
sure.
Who gives a shit? Like, it's like this. I don't know. This is such a non-story. It's like, people are mad that Barbie didn't get makeup. I was like, I don't even remember. Like, I watched that movie, rewatched it like a week ago, and I was like, there was a makeup in that? Like, I don't know, man.
There's some makeup in that. Yeah, I would say so. One big one I would like to see win it, just because I saw it just recently, is Poor Things. I'd be a big supporter of that one. Then probably, you know, the Indiana Jones, your baby Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny probably should be in there. Yeah. Should win for just the actual visual effects of the de-aging in there, right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. There's like times when it looked a little bit like weird, but I think that overall it looked... It's kind of amazing that you look like Harrison Ford from the 80s. You're like, that's insane.
Yeah, generally they did a very good job in that movie. Totally agree. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess we can move on. Anything else you want to mention here is maybe something you're definitely shooting for, rooting for, or not so much?
I don't know. When they announce the actual, like, these are, this is the nominees for the nominees. So I'm just cool. Yeah. Like, cool. When we get to the real nominees and the winners, I'll be more invested. Yeah. Even the nominees, I'll be invested. This is just the preamble to the preamble, actual nominee. Yeah. So.
Yes. All right. So I guess moving on, get to what we've been watching this week. Haven't watched too much stuff still. I was on the Tarkov grind for a little bit, but they've very much moved into what's called the pre-wipe event, which is just them getting ready to wipe all the servers, wipe everybody's progress. So sort of build on that for the rest of the year. So definitely been watching a lot more than I have recently. The Curse, the show I've been talking about for the last couple, I would say about 6 weeks. They've just had the seventh episode this week, so it's been at least 6 or 7 weeks I've been watching the show. From Benny Safdie, producer, has Nathan Fielder starring as Asher Siegel and Emma Stone as Whitney Siegel. Big year for Emma Stone in this show and also for Poor Things. Some of the best acting I've seen. Performances I've seen this year from her. She'll definitely get huge nominations for her for this show at the Emmys next year or the year after, however that stuff works out. So I have Corbin Bernstein in this. You have Barkhad Abdi, which is the famous for being the I Am the Captain Now man in that movie. Mm. Let's see who else is in this. Some people continually pop up in this. But yeah, it's I think it's gonna be a 10 episodes series, so they're definitely beginning to wind up, beginning to wrap up the show, starting to see maybe where it's going. But it's also, you know, it's a Safdie Brothers thing, so it's a, you know, it's a psychological black comedy, black satire. It gets very dark and awkward, so you know the last three episodes could go in a very different direction. But yeah, definitely something I would highly recommend checking out for end of the year stuff if you want to check out some of the best TV shows this year. So there's that.
I mean, I don't have Showtime, but
yeah, but you know where it is. You know where you can check that stuff out. Speaking of stuff on there, Murder at the End of the World did just finish up. It was a 7-episode. Project from the Britt Marling, the creator of the OA, so that finished up. It was fine. It was just one of those, like, technology bad, technology weird, technology is fucking us up, social media bad, tech giant bad. It's very mealy mouthed about that sort of thing of, like, we're all responsible because we all use it. Oh, you're criticizing technology, and yet you use it. You know, checkmate, atheists. So there, got you. That sort of thing. Just it was fine. For I would watch it. If you're gonna watch it, I would just watch it for Emma Corrin's performance in this. Their performance in this.
I'm a big fan of them.
Yeah, they're very good in this. You know, I really hope to see more of them in the future. Definitely look forward to seeing whatever they were in. What else was in this? Harris Dickinson.
Clive Owen,
not great.
I think he like the second lead?
He's the second lead, but he's not great. I don't know.
I love Clive Owen.
He's been good. He's been good in good things. He's given good performances in the past. Harris Dickinson, again, speaking of people having a great year. He's also in The Iron Claw, which I'll probably see tomorrow. He's in this. Let's see. Joan Shen is in this. Yeah, some very good supporting cast. So I'll just go in for it for that, for some of the good noir stuff, some of the good character building, but the story and the plot overall sort of left me wanting a little bit. So there's that. Okay. And then, you know, for this, I'll save my deeper and more nuanced thoughts about things like Poor Things and Maestro for the Best of the Year show. But for now, I'll just say I did see it and was very, 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 very impressed. I would just say that. Will not speak to whether or not I can confirm nor deny that it's going to be on my Best of the Year list, my 10 Best of the Year list. But it is kind of incredible. It's one of the most interesting performances I've seen from anybody, especially from Emma Stone in this. Just goes places. You know, Yorgos Lanthimos has been one of my favorite directors in the past few years, obviously being a A24 fanboy. been a big, you know, big fan of his previous stuff, The Favorite, Killing of the Sacred Deer, Lobster, Dogtooth, all of that stuff. So definitely has that aesthetic, has that tone. It has, like, you know, that that stuff of, like, that I used to like, well, still do, the Charlie Kaufman sort of affect to a lot of the dialogue in this. Has that sort of dreamlike, weird, ethereal design to the set design. I just had it pulled up. I want to mention it. Shoen Heath and James Price did the production design. It's wild. It's really, really wild. It's like, I wanted to look it up because I want to mention it because City of Lost Children had a very similar effect. I don't know if you were familiar with that. It's the same director of Alien Resurrection.
The weird French guy.
The weird French guy. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Jean-Pierre Jeudet, I believe is his name. Let's see.
Sure.
The City of Lost Children, Delicatessens, Alien Resurrection. Yes. And Amelie. Yes.
That guy. Okay.
Yes. Jean-Pierre Jeudet has very similar, you know, production design, similar set design to this movie. I sort of picked that out from that. Yeah. Definitely one of the ones you should watch for the end of the year. I don't know if it's going to make your list, but it's definitely something you'll be thankful for watching. I think it's definitely going to be in conversation for Emma Stone's performance, for conversation for cinematography, for set design, like I said, costume design. All that stuff.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, Emma Stone, I've been a real big fan of hers since, you know, Superbad. So, one of my absolute favorite actresses of all time, and a person that I've said in more than one relationship is my hall pass. I will probably check that one out. Yeah. And yeah, Yorgos Lanthimos, like, you know, he's weird as shit, but I like him.
Exactly. And then the other big release this year, one that we've been waiting for pretty much all year. I was thinking back on one of the first pods we did this year, and I think I mentioned it early on because
I listened back to that one. Yeah.
So I think the only reason I knew about it was because Sean mentioned it. Sean Fantasy mentioned it on the big pick that week. So Bradley Cooper, his second directorial sophomore project. You always have those, you know, sophomore slumps things of that, or, you know, the next thing somebody's going to write or direct, you always have that concern that the next one's going to be sort of won't live up to, you know, the expectations that you're going to have and won't live up to the awards you receive from the first one. But this one definitely will match that, if not exceed it, just based on, you know, the performance itself, the prosthetics, the he puts his whole thing in this movie. It's very much, I think for a lot of different reasons, for a lot of obvious reasons, it's going to get a lot of comparisons to last year's Tar, you know, big bombastic performance by one of our great actors of the 21st century. This is obviously directed by him, co-written by him, Andrea Singer, produced by himself, Martin Scorsese, Steven Spielberg. I don't know if you heard the story Mr. Cooper was telling this week on all these podcasts that he's been on the circuit, of the story of how he got.
He wasn't on this podcast, so I didn't hear him. When is your interview with Cooper coming out, Damien?
It's going to be coming soon, man. I'm close with him. Okay. Very close. I have a tangential relationship with the Coop man. No, he did a few interviews this week saying how that he did a rough cut of Star is Born and he was showing it to Spielberg. And at that point, this was, you know, late 2017, 2018. So there was still sort of up in the air of what Spielberg might do next. And this was on the docket for something he was potentially looking at doing. And after Bradley Cooper showed him a rough cut of Star is Born, Spielberg said, "You're directing Maestro." The reports were he said, "You're directing this fucking movie," or something like that. It's very, something Spielberg might say. But yeah, it's kind of incredible. You know, I don't want to go too deep in it because I don't want to spoil it for you or anybody listening. And also don't want to talk about it more on the Best of the Year show. But it's everything everybody's been saying. You know, Carey Mulligan, one of her best performances that I've seen from her, one of, if not Bradley Cooper's best performance, the art direction, the cinematography, the costuming, the way it sort of is about their relationship in the same way that Killers of the Flower Moon ended up being about, you know, the Leo and Lily Gladstone relationship in that movie. This movie very much, you know,
and how Napoleon was about Napoleon and Josephine.
And Josephine, yes. Yeah. So it is the year of, you know, big egotistical men and the women and the women they you know,
their muses, their women muses that inspire them. Yes.
That's good. Yeah. Good pull there. I was looking for that word exactly. But yeah, no, it's just incredible. I think it's definitely not something you're going to go to. It's not the movie you think it's going to be. And I think it's a lot better than the movie you think it's going to be. So I'll just leave it there. Can't wait for you to see this and can't wait to talk about it more at the Best of the Year show.
Okay. Fair enough. Yes. I'm going to have to check it out. I'm more movie homework from Damien.
Isn't this just like the Academy homework? This is just
world's homework.
The culture is telling you to watch it. And what I caught up with right after we talked last time was The Boar and the Heron. People have been talking about the title of it, and I don't know why it's called The Boy and the Heron. I don't know why.
Because there's a boy and there's a heron in it, Damien. I thought it was pretty obvious. Like, what movie did you see?
How Do You Live is such a better title. Like, I don't know. Miyazaki has been notorious for not allowing cuts of the movie, not allowing international cuts of the movie. So I'd be very interested to know why he allowed international distributors to change the name of the movie, because How Do You Live is such a better title and has, you know, it's the meaning of the movie. It's the crux of the movie. It's the major theme of the movie. So I think going into it, I think
it's also the name of the book that it's not based on, which I think confused people, but the book appears in the movie.
Yeah.
And also, like, it doesn't translate directly. Like, it's How Do You Live, and you is plural. Like, there's a way to say that in Japanese but not in English, so you can't differentiate between the single you. It's like The Last Samurai.
Yeah,
it was like people like think it's about Tom Cruise, but it's about Ken Watanabe and all those dudes. So it's, I don't know, and maybe I think it's like a lost in translation type thing. They're like, this will be easier for English audiences to understand.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, yes, I agree, but it's shitty. Shitty
that they, it's not as bad as Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which is the dumbest retitle of all time.
You're not wrong. So you saw.
And that's from English to English.
Yeah, you saw the Japanese version, correct?
I did. Yeah, I saw the subtitled version.
Yeah. So in the interest of, you know, seeing the different versions, like I saw the not what was it? The not
you and your different versions. I'm like, Damien, see this version. You're like, okay, and then you just, it's don't.
Eclectic. We have. I like to bring an eclectic view of different things we're watching here. The English cast is pretty phenomenal. I think if you ask somebody,
it's a stacked cast. It's a stacked cast. I would not have been sad to see this in the dub.
Not only is it a stacked cast, I think if you go into this and you leave the theater and you ask somebody who played the Heron, you would never know it was Robert Pattinson. I think he went to the studio and said, this is a, you know, apocryphal story, he went into the studio and had recordings on his phone of, like, after he watched the Japanese version, he went and recorded or did like a rough cut of his lines into his phone and sort of, you know, repurposed that and recreated that those lines as he was doing his lines in the vocal booth. And it's incredible. It's one of the best vocal performances I've ever heard. Yeah. I'm your mama. I'm your mom, or something like that. I'm your mommy. Some shit like that. I just want to hear Robert Pattinson repeat, you know, over and over again, I'm your mommy to me.
whatever gets you going, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm not here to kink shame.
Exactly. Yes, like you said, when you reviewed this, really great. I think it's, you know, top five Miyazaki, definitely top five Ghibli movies overall. Fantastic film. Highly recommend, as you did as well, right?
Yes, absolutely. Phenomenal yes. film.
Yeah, really, really great. So let's get to something I'm expecting you not to recommend. Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom. What'd you think of this, yes, buddy boy?
Absolutely yeah. terrible. A horrible movie that I had such a fun time watching. It's so bad. It's so terrible. It's just, you know, it's like the first Aquaman was way better than it had any feasible right to be. This is a movie you're like watching. You're like, I guess it makes sense that they made it, because like the first one made $1 billion, but also it's just like this weird artifact of a cinematic universe that no longer exists. So they're like, well, like, we started to make the movie before any of this happened. It's a very successful film. This is the one character from this universe people actually really like.
Yeah.
And it's weird and dumb and bad, and like there clearly was a lot of reshoots, and you know, Patrick Wilson, I don't know, I think here's a question for you. Is Patrick Wilson the best actor to be in consistently horrible bullshit? Like, yeah. like everything he's in is awful. He's in yeah. like just schlock, and he always knows he's in it. In this one, he's just like he's just like hamming it up and like eating cockroaches for no reason. It's so bad. And I don't know, man. And it's like the end, it's like, we solved global warming. I don't give a shit if I spoil this. We fuck this movie. Like, it's like there's like so much stuff in it that's just like, they're on this evil volcano lair, and they're just like, nah, we couldn't see this global warming lair that they have because it's shielded from heat. I'm like, they're in a volcano with green smoke. What are you fucking talking about? Gordon, why don't you just look for the green smoke volcano? How many of those are there? I don't know, man. This movie is ridiculous. This movie is so dumb. And I really had a blast watching it. Like, you gotta be inebriated, I think. You know, yeah. I had a few drinks beforehand.
Nice.
I looked over at my friend who I'm seeing it with, and he had his pen. So we were like, all right, let's get into it.
Did they have any post-credit scene? Did you stay for the post-credit scene?
I stayed for the post-credit scene. The post-credit scene is a callback to that time Patrick Wilson ate a cockroach, eats another cockroach.
Oh.
That's it. You're like, oh, is there going to be... Is the Flash gonna show up? Is it gonna be like,
yeah,
there's nobody. Like, here's the thing, there's no acknowledgement that this is in like the wider deal, because I'm like, you know, the thing of like, well, why don't they just call Superman, why don't they just call Wonder Woman, you know? And yep. like the Flash was very much living in the world where like they all showed up, and this one it's like he definitely should have probably been like, who do I need to stop this guy, my brother who's in jail? I'm like, whoa. What about literally any of your friends who you say yeah. the world with multiple times? But like, it's not even acknowledged. There's no cameos. It's bizarre. A truly bizarre film. And James Wan, I'm yep. sorry to say, he seems like a nice guy. He's an absolutely terrible filmmaker. Hmm. I know that he's got like stands out there, and he's made some good stuff when he's making stuff with his buddy Lee Whannell, who is legitimately a great filmmaker. You take James Wan away from Lee Whannell, and James Wan makes horrible schlocky bullshit.
Right.
That looks great often. Not great, like wow, this is impressive. It's gonna win awards, but it's weird. It's weird and interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. I mean, Not really, but, you know.
Were you thinking it was going to be good? Like, it's no. fucking Aquaman and Lost Kingdom. Like, there's no chance it was going to be good.
I'm saying it's unfortunate you watched this movie.
I don't know. I had fun. Okay. I would rather have seen Poor Things, but the people I was seeing, you know, just were more interested in Jason Momoa.
Yes.
There was a couple. Yeah, there. I did see it with a few women who were maybe interested in seeing a shirtless Jason Momoa, which I don't even know if he got shirtless, so I think they were a little disappointed. So, you know, which I get.
Yeah.
You know, he's a strapping man.
He's a strapping young lad. Yep, exactly.
He didn't even say my man.
Just phoned it in all over the place. That's unfortunate.
There's so many jokes in this movie that fall flat. They like just constantly throwing out jokes.
Yeah,
and like every like one in five hits.
Okay, so I mean, the less said about that movie, the better. We could just go ahead and move on from that one. All right, Mary Little Batman is something I'm just now hearing about. Directed by Mike Roth. So tell me about this.
Yeah, what happened to the days when we used to switch back and forth? I'm running out of breath. Okay,
forgot about that one. Yes.
Yeah. Need to start putting it back in the show notes.
Yes.
I didn't even realize I had two DC things in a row. But yeah, you know, I watched. This because, you know, as might become, may or may not become apparent later, Batman and Christmas, I think, work very well together. Mm. So I was like, let's watch this. You know, it's the animation style is really interesting. It's Damian Wayne story. I didn't like it that much, though. I thought Damian Wayne in this character, like Damian Wayne is like an 8-year-old and he's pretty insufferable. It's pretty, it's very,
nobody likes
it's
him.
Like home. Yeah, it's he's very, very annoying. It's like Batman meets like Home Alone, and it's just like I think that Luke Wilson is really miscast as Batman. You're like, who decided that? Like,
wow.
Yeah. Hey, it's like what? I don't know. It's whatever. It's kind of just whatever. I'll only mention it. Probably wouldn't even put it down for what I've been watching, except for the fact that it is Christmas.
Yeah.
So I guess I should have a Christmas movie in my what I've been watching. But yeah, it's fine. It's not even fine. It's fine.
Damian Wayne is a Grant Morrison concoction. Do you know who Damian Wayne's mother is?
It's Talia al Ghul, which she comes up in, like there's like a couple of references to her.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I knew that going in.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They could have said something about Marion Cotillard or something. Cool.
The general consensus on Damian in the comic books is he's annoying and should be retconned out of the entire thing. I listen to iFanboy every week, and every week they're always talking about how terrible it is and how they're just not writing Batman correctly anymore. Apparently, they do that like, let's take everything away from him, strip him down to his basic necessities, and just like they he's not rich anymore. He doesn't have any of his bat gadgets. His bat family hates him. Blah 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 blah. It's just like, guys, stop trying to reinvent Batman. Just do good Batman. You know, same as the movie stuff. It's just like, stop trying to do a new take on him. Stop trying to, you know, break him down to his core things of what Batman is. We've done that. We've seen his parents die so many times. We've seen him, you know, be a teenager. We've seen him be a new Batman. You know, what was the show that had it was like young Batman? Was that the Gotham? Was it called Gotham? Yeah, Gotham, right? It was about like basically the
Gordon. Gotham, and then the guy from the OC was Gordon.
Yes.
I like that actor a lot.
He's good.
I don't remember who played Batman, but I like the guy who plays Gordon quite a bit.
So yeah, all of that stuff is just
taking. Oh yeah, he's like a little baby Batman because it's like Gordon's show, right?
It is Gordon's show, basically. You watched something that I've looked forward to for a while because I read the book, like I said. Otega Mushfig is based on Otega Mushfig's book called Eileen. It was directed by William Oldroy, starring Thomas McKenzie, Anne Hathaway, and Shea Whigham, our guy Shea Whigham.
Shea Whigham.
What'd you think of Eileen?
He plays against type. He's a drunk, angry cop from Boston. <in this movie. laughs> I was really excited going into this. I was like, ooh, I was doing this thing where I was just like, hey there, Thomas Edward, why don't you come over here and give me a smoke and a smoosh? It's me, Anne Hathaway. Doing her about. And what I took away from this movie, Damien, and
yes, sir.
So I finally understand you, I think, because this movie is just like, you know what it's like in New England is it's cold and it's yes. dark and everyone fucking sucks. And I'm yes. like, okay.
Yes.
That I think was the whole message yep. of the movie.
Yep.
That was it. Yeah, this is one of those movies that I think it was trying really hard to be Hitchcock.
Yeah.
And I was like interested. It was one of those movies that was like, oh, where is this going? What's happening? And then it like really like there is a turn. And you're like, oh, okay. That's kind of out of nowhere. That's where this movie's going. I guess that's what this movie's gonna be like in the back half. And it's like actually 20 minutes over. It's 20 minutes later, it's over. And you're like, what? So like there's like 80 minutes of setup and then like 20 minutes of the actual plot, and then the movie just kind of ends very abruptly, and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Great performances. You know, the vibes of New England, I'm assuming, are accurate, where everyone's depressed and your dad is a drunk cop who's like, I'm Shea Wiggum. Rah, rah, rah. So, you know, you might like it. I don't know. I was very disappointed by it because this was high on my anticipated movies towards the end of the year. And yeah. I don't know. I love a good lesbian romance with sad lesbians, you know, like dreary, yeah. like things, especially in like the 50s and 40s and whatever. I was like 60s, whatever it was said. And I was like, I'm on board. And then it was just like, really, really.
It went places.
I don't even
yeah.
know, man.
It went some yeah. wild places. Saw Carol this week. Did you talk about that last time or was that?
I did not talk about it last time. I think I watched Carol because I was like, I need to like kind of get like the, you know, they're very different yeah. films, but you know, it right. is still like, you know, this story of this forbidden romance between these two women in this time period set at Christmas.
Yeah.
And God, Carol was so good. Carol was so fucking very good, man.
Carol's very good.
I was like, God damn, this movie is amazing. I want to cry. Like,
yeah.
And just, I want to spoil the end of Carol here. But it was so nice to have a movie where queer characters actually got to have a happy ending.
Yeah.
Like that's so often, especially in films set in the past, especially with like sad lesbians. It's like, well, they because they make you think it's just like, yeah, well, they don't get to be together. And but they do. And it's such a slow burn and it's so interesting and it's so immaculately shot and it's so cozy. And, yeah, I really dug it. I really dug Carol quite a lot.
Yeah, the Anne Hathaway described the Eileen as Carol meets Reservoir Dogs. And it's, yeah, I mean, I read the book, so I have a pretty good idea of what that means. Is that an accurate yeah. description?
Except it's the twist happen on like whether there's like 4 pages left in the book? Because
pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much, yep.
That makes sense. All right.
Yeah.
I know that the author, I never know how to pronounce that name. I know you just said it, but they were also the screenwriter.
Yeah, Ortega Maschvig. Yeah, she was the screenwriter.
It's
name
I see a work a lot, but I never know how to vocalize.
She has quite a few books. I really liked My Year, Rest and Relaxation, Eileen, and I think she has another one that might be adapted as well. So yeah, very, very good author, but not great screenwriter apparently. Or just the book doesn't the book never would have translated good to a screen adaptation.
Yeah. I wonder if I would have liked the book. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. So I believe with that, we can get to top 5 Christmas movies since we're moving on pretty quickly. Don't need to take a break unless you need to.
No, I'm good.
All right. So, yeah, just a pretty traditional top 5 this year, top 5 Christmas movies. I did at the end of this, I'll go back and look at my top 5 because we did this the first year I did the podcast in 2019. So after this, we go through our top 5 and do honorable mentions. I'll go back and reference my list from 4 years ago and see how it changed, see how it stays the same. So with that, I'll start us off with my number five, which I believe was probably still on my list in 2019, which is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. They just did this on the rewatchables just recently. Did a whole rewatch of it. Yeah, just what I think what you'll see as a common denominator between all of my picks. It's all these picks are extremely quotable, are extremely memorable, have a lot of very memorable scenes, very memorable cast of characters, very memorable, you know, just moments. I know a lot of people go back and watch this now as adults, and you very much relate to the neighbors of just like childless, you know, 30s couple just want to have a nice, quiet, you know, winter evening by themselves. And you got these fucking psychotic neighbors. One guy's outside screaming, "Shitter's full!" You know, you got one guy electrocuting himself on the lights.
Just, I have not seen this movie in years.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a rewatch of it in 2019 when I had it on my list then. Yeah, it's just very, very funny. The, of course, the amazing quote of when, you know, at the end when he discovers that he didn't get the the bonus he thought he was going to get. Let me see. I think I had it pulled up here. See if I can find it again. Did I close it? I might have closed it. Yeah, unfortunately, I closed it. But yeah, you know the scene of just like he's calling his boss all these names and stuff.
Yeah.
It's very, very, very funny. But yeah, that is my number five, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Before I get into my list, I got to ask. So when crafting your list, like how did you consider like movies that are more Christmassy or movies that are better? Like how did you weigh good movie versus good Christmas movie?
Excuse me. Top of my list is very much feeling of Christmas. Being home with your family, the house has the touchstones and trademarks of Christmas, the things you think about when you think back to Christmas as a kid. So that's the top of my list. Bottom of my list is stuff that I watched as a kid during Christmas time. And so to answer your question, I don't have like Die Hard. There's no Die Hards on here or any like, I mean, I know I've seen Carol being, you know, tried it out as a traditional Christmas movie, which I guess I wouldn't not allow it on other people's lists. You can do that. But a lot of my list is just straight up when you think of Christmas, you think of these movies. How about you?
Well, because I thought about that a lot. And like, you know, I think that there's movies that are higher up that are worse than the ones that are a little bit lower, because they're like, they might be better movies, but some are like better Christmas movies.
Yeah.
And I kind of ranked it by like, what do I want to watch most at Christmas time? And like, they're all good movies, but like, there's some that I'm like, when it's December and I want to put on something to watch, like, what am I going to want to watch most is kind of how I crafted my list.
Nice. Very cool. So what is your number five?
Yeah, and with that in mind, a movie that I do like. What was that?
That's my freaking Siri went off. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so with that in mind, a movie that I do want to rewatch usually at Christmas. I think it's a great Christmas movie, and it's one I did rewatch this Christmas, and I actually got to see it in a theater for the first time ever, and that is actually Die Hard. I think Die Hard is a great, great Christmas film. It's got all the home. I mean, I don't know. I think it's kind of like, I don't need to convince, like, Die Hard is a fucking Christmas movie. I don't need to convince anybody.
Sure.
You know, it's got all the hallmarks of a Christmas movie, a guy coming home for the holidays, some family strife. But it just happens to have be one of the greatest action films of all time. And you know, I think that I really appreciated even more getting to see it in that theater. I got to see it in a Dolby, and the sound in this movie is so fucking phenomenal. And seeing it with that pristine audio, it was one of the cooler experiences I've gotten to see in the theater. And yeah, you know, the holiday cheer is all there, you know. You know, ho, 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 I have a machine gun now.
Yeah, my criteria for like a Christmas movie or a movie you can use on a list like this, like, you know, is it wintertime? Yes. Is it reference? Does it have some reference to Christmas? Yes. You know, does it have, you know, Christmas trees, Christmas lights? Does it have something? Mm-hmm. Has to have some kind of reference to Christmas. You know, the Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Yeah, sure. A lot of Shane Black movies absolutely can fit under that criteria. Yeah, it's a pretty loose. You know, I think if you want to be stodgy, if you want to be a Scrooge, go ahead and be like, well, it's not. It doesn't have.
It's more of a Christmas movie than fucking It's a Wonderful Life, which is barely at Christmas.
True. True. Yes, exactly. And, you know, you think about Christmas Carol, doesn't, I mean, the stuff we think about with Christmas, the tropes or the, what do you call them? Like Santa, a tree, giving gifts on the 25th. A lot of that was not invented, but it was taken from like pagan rituals. Right. So I'm wondering if around Dickens times they even had. They would have those things, the stockings. Was that stuff you had around in the late 1800s? I'm not sure.
I think that's when it was starting to take shape. Like Santa was like a proto Santa kind of, you know, yeah. Like there was a, you know, he was like a guy, and I think I don't know. Yeah. He would, yeah. You could look at those old like, you know, wood block or whatever the fuck they are, drawings of Santa Claus.
Yeah. So I mean, even if they wanted to, they couldn't reference that stuff back then. So yeah, if you're talking about a movie that's a Christmas movie, then A Christmas Carol obviously has to be that, but it's just funny that touchstone, that trademark, that iconic Christmas movie is devoid of a lot of things you think about when you think about Christmas. No tree, no stockings, no Santa, no reindeer. None of that stuff is even in that Christmas Carol. So yeah, I think I have agree with you that, you know, a pretty loose approximation of what a Christmas movie is always good to go for. There.
Yeah, it's like a genre, right? It's,
yeah.
It's or a subject. It's like a Western, you know, you can like look and see like, oh, this movie, you can like see a Western and be like, this looks like a Western, you know, and the same thing with a Christmas movie. You can see a Christmas movie like this looks like a Christmas movie, even if, you know, it's a anti-Western or a revisionist Western or something like that. You're still like, yeah, this is still trading on that iconography in some way. And even if it's not, the whole movie isn't set in the Old West, there's still parts of it that are. And I think that, yeah, that's the whole vibe. And some movies can be more Christmassy than others. And like you say, some movies are Christmas movies, in my opinion, predate a lot of our traditions that we have. I think it's not going to show up on my list, but one I really did consider putting on my list was The Green Knight. Because I think that is a Christmas movie, but, you know, there's no Santa, there's no stockings because it's in the Middle Ages, you know? I think that, you know, just like any good genre, Christmas movies have certain things that are important, you know. Westerns, to go back to them again, are all about, like, a lot of times they're about these loners, it's about man versus wilderness or all these things. And Christmas movies are, like, about family or not being around your family at, like, the holidays and dealing with like loneliness and, you know, having some family strife or like realizing you don't have any family. Like all the great Christmas movies are about that. So that factored in really big into my consideration. And, you know, to touch on Die Hard, it's about a guy who's trying to reconnect with his wife, reconnect with his family. You know, that's what's so great about a lot of these. Same thing with you. It's a movie you mentioned, you know, Christmas Vacation. It's about this family going through a really big tumultuous time of their life and the dad trying to realize that, oh no, my family is. That's why there's every one of these fucking, there's so many Christmas movies from the 80s and 90s that are about like a dad who cares more about his job than he cares about his son. Then he's like, no, I have to get the Turbo Man.
Exactly. So for my number four, speaking of a man who has no family because they were murdered by what was his name? Was the guy that shot or supposedly shot Batman's family, Batman's parents?
Joe Chill.
Joe Chill, thank you. Yes, Batman, Bruce Wayne, lost his parents. And one of the movies that was, you know, thought of as a Christmas movie now, I think it's not really up for dispute, is Batman Returns. I watch this movie all the time as a kid, even though Penguin's death is one of the most graphic things I've ever seen. I would imagine Yorgos Lanthimos, speaking of Poor Things, took a lot of influence from, you know, Tim Burton's sort of the world that he builds, especially with the production design and the set design. I saw a lot of Batman Returns and a lot of Tim Burton's Gotham version of Gotham in Poor Things set design. Obviously released in 1992, directed by Tim Burton, stars Mr. Michael Keaton, Danny DeVito, one of the best, most iconic Michelle Pfeiffer performances, one of the most iconic Christopher Walken performances, just unhinged, really, really went for it. Obviously, incredible Danny Elfman score, and, you know, takes place during the winter, during the Christmas time. Some amazing, you know, so many shots of this movie could be put up as, you know, posters or wallpaper, especially the shots of Catwoman's apartment building and all the, what do you call that? I forgot the word for the sort of that type of signage. The type of neon lights all around her apartment. Okay. Yeah. All of that stuff. Very evocative imagery of her apartment there. And of course, when she dies and is resurrected, it's a very gross movie. We'll go back and watch this movie. This movie is wet. It's greasy. It's grimy. There's a lot of just blood and just everybody's oozing some sort of fluid at certain points. What else was I going to say about this movie? Yeah, just so much blood and people are just being scratched by her. I think it was pretty recent that behind the scenes video came out of Michelle Pfeiffer doing that scene where she's whipping the whip around and she's taking out the heads of the mannequins. Do you see that? That was fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Like, she actually did all that herself, which is very, very impressive. Just a great, great movie. Great movie overall. Great score. Great, again, very, visually evocative. Think back to this movie. Just there's so many scenes that just stand out as very just definitely got probably, influenced our, I got a little bit of a goth girl fetish, but I know you very much do. So I'm assuming, Celia Kyle was one of your first crushes when you were a kid.
Yes. Oh man, I think I was probably too young, but on a subconscious level, I'm sure got me,
Exactly.
Yeah. I saw a very goth girl today at work and I was like, said to my friend, I was just like, you ever just see somebody and you're like, I would let them ruin my life. That was like, Bruce Wayne, basically, in this movie. He's like, he sees Selina Kyle and it's like, maybe I'd let her ruin my life. Huh? Like a nuts.
Wanna get nuts? I got nuts.
Yeah. No, so, I love this movie.
Yeah, it's great.
But did you have anything else to say about it?
I mean, no, you can go ahead. You can go ahead.
Well, I love this movie so much that it's actually my number four as well.
Nice.
Interestingly enough, perfectly lined up on that one.
Yep.
This movie is fantastic. It is such a Christmas movie, and it's one that I feel like people love to like do the Die Hard debate and all these, the alternative Christmas movies like Black Christmas and stuff like that. And like, for my money, like this is probably like the best version of that. It's so good. And like I said, Bruce Wayne is this lonely guy, this orphan. And then he sees Penguin, who's also this orphan, and Catwoman, who is also just all alone, and it's this movie about these two lonely weirdos trying to find each other at Christmas, and they have this romance that is ill-fated, and you can't deny the, like, so much of this movie is hinging on the fact that it's Christmas. It's got all the, like, presents in the tree is, like, the tree lighting is a major plot point of this movie. Yeah. The king, or the penguin being like, on Christmas, I'm gonna, like, sneak it, like, have all the, it's almost like the next step of like the Grinch, except it's like, biblical, just like, because how he got thrown down the river like Moses, and then he's gonna try and bring the plagues to the firstborn of Gotham, and steal all the kids of Gotham. And it's got all these it's just like this creepy Christmas movie about these people who just want to find love and acceptance. And I love that it even ends with, like, Bruce Wayne says, or Alfred says, Merry Christmas, Master Wayne. And he's like, good cheer towards men and women.
Women.
So, it ends with the Christmas light. Like, this is pure Christmas classic. And like I said, with my criteria, this is one I want to watch. I haven't watched it yet this year. But this is a movie that I want to throw on at Christmas for sure.
Yes, exactly. Let's see. So that was your number four. So I'll go on to my number three.
Yeah.
Yes. And trying to look up where this movie takes place, but my three through one is it's very like movies I think back on, and it's like it's like you're saying with Carol, these three are very evocative of the Northeast. In the Northeast, it's the winter. So my number three is Black Christmas, directed by Bob Clark, obviously. This is from 1974. Stars Olivia Hussey, Kira Dula, and Margot Kidder, and John Saxon, who would go on to be in another very famous horror movie about 10 years later, Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, just the thing I think about when I think about like Christmas and winter in New England, and especially around here, it's you know, we have basements. I think that's one thing. You know, California doesn't have. We have attics. We have basements. You do. You do have a basement or no?
Zodiac. We don't have basements.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
The thing that I think about in this movie when it comes to like New England is it's very, very, very claustrophobic. And my house growing up was very claustrophobic. My friend's house, my parents' friend's house were very, very small. So looking back on this movie takes place in a sorority house. So it's a very, you know, enclosed space, a lot of people living in the same space together. And it's just this killer that's going around killing people and shoving them in closets and shit and shoving them in attics. And, you know, it has a lot of like personality to it. It has a lot of like character building. The sort of the housemaid, the person that is like, you know, 50-year-old woman that sort of, you know, tries to keep everybody in line, has these moments where she'll be like reaching into her pocket or reaching into a cabinet and pulling out this thing of liquor. She's just one of those character beats. I'm like, huh, that's a very, you know, it's one of those things you didn't have to include, but it's good you did it just to have some sort of, you know, character beat about that of you know, making this you know, otherwise background character have some depth to her. Yeah, just a great movie overall. One of the best horror movies I've ever seen, and especially one of the best horror movies taking place during Christmas. I would put this up there with some of the best you know, Christmas themed horror movies of the last, I don't know, 30, 40 years. So if you haven't seen it, highly recommend checking it out.
I do still need to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, I know that there's another Bob Clark Christmas movie that may or may not come up.
Maybe.
But so, yeah. So, you know, I do need to watch it. And people always talk about like Halloween being like the first slasher. I'm like, well, there was another holiday themed movie that was kind of a real, like maybe the first slasher. That was this one, of course.
Yes. So number three, what's your number three?
My number three, you know, I've had a couple, you know, action movies a little more off the beaten path, not quite as traditional Christmas movies. But my number three is definitely traditional Christmas, even if it's a little bit not as beloved as it should be, because it is beloved, and that is Arthur Christmas. I love Arthur Christmas. So I'm going to watch something that feels really Christmassy with the Santa, with the reindeer, with all that stuff, with all the good Christmas lore. And I love the way, like, when a Christmas movie tries to explain the Christmas lore in a really fun and interesting way, and it has, like, Bill Nye is in this as Grand Santa, and it's just, it's like, yeah, this is what you felt like when you were a kid at Christmas. And it's just about this guy who, Arthur, who's, like, the son of Santa Claus, and he's just this big dork who loves Christmas, and Christmas is, and it's a big part of the movie is just how about Christmas, how it's become corporatized and commercialized and all that stuff, and that's really not the message of Christmas, at least, you know, as we want it to be, of this kind of pure thing about like joy and love and giving. And it is once again about family, so I think, you know, like that's very important, the familial relations between the Santa family, and this is a big driving force. It's got some great elves. Briny Elf is one of my favorite characters. Maybe because she's a goth girl, but you know, but it's so much fun. Yeah, I mean, it's a movie that not everybody has seen about Christmas. It's made by Aardman Animation, who they're obviously incredible. It's one of their few movies that isn't claymation, but it does actually kind of feel, even though it is CG and it's not claymation, it still feels, you still feel the Aardman touch. It feels like it's somehow, you know, it's animated with the digital models the same way that they would have animated the clay models.
Huh, interesting. Yeah, I've literally never heard of this movie.
Really? Oh, really, man, yeah. That's a shame.
when you first mentioned it, I thought you were talking about like a spinoff of Arthur, you know, the Dudley Moore movie from the 80s. I was like, I know they made
Russell
a second
Brand,
one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know they made a second one. I didn't realize they made a Christmas version of that, huh?
Yeah, nothing to do with it. Nothing to do with, yeah, just another guy named Arthur. Not related to the king either. So
or the anteater. Are you aware of the anteater?
Is he an aardvark or is he an anteater? I thought he was an aardvark.
Let me see. Arthur.
He might be an anteater.
He might be, yeah. Let me see. Arthur, he is an anthropomorphic aardvark.
Okay, I know what I'm talking about sometimes.
Yeah. Did you guys have PBS out there? I don't know. PBS always felt Northeastern thing to me.
No, we got it.
Okay. Gotcha. Was it Channel 3 or is it like higher up? Because it was always Channel 3 out
there.
It was
on one of the, it was like a single digit. I don't remember which one it was, but it was like, it was down there. It was like 2 or 4 or something like
two
that.
Two or four.
Know.
Yep.
One of those early channels.
Yes, so that was your number three. My number two is pretty obvious. It's Home Alone, but it's, again, a lot of my list is just, you know, the ones I've watched over and over and over and over. Just makes you feel all cozy to put on. You know, it's just interesting to go back and look at, because I think it was like 4 or 5 years ago that I watched this and realized, people probably realized this the first time they watched this, but to realize why, when they get to the airport, why they didn't realize they were missing Kevin when they were boarding the plane, because they dropped the ticket into the trash when they were cleaning up the spilled milk, right? They spilled the milk at one point over the table. And as they're cleaning the table, they take everything off the table, including Kevin's ticket, which for whatever reason was sitting on the table by itself. So I don't know if that's something you realized the first time you watched it or...
I have not seen this movie since I was a kid, if I'm being honest.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
That rings a bell. But yeah, it's been a minute since I've watched this movie. I've watched pieces of it. Like,
yeah,
Filthy Animal, you know, and like, you know, Focus and stuff like that.
Yeah, this is a constant rewatch for me. I just loved everything about him. This one and... without realizing it, you know, something like The Goonies, I very much tried to replicate in my life of he has at one point when he's leaving the house and he's trying to escape the house and escape the intruders, there's like a treehouse maybe 30 feet away from the top of the house from the attic. And so he attaches
he attaches a zip line
to the treehouse and zip lines from there to the treehouse. I had... something, my roof wasn't very tall, so I had like a tree in my backyard that I tried to attach the clothesline to, and that didn't hold very well, and I was busting my ass a few times doing that. So I tried to replicate, you know, the Kevin McAllister, some of the traps there by putting a bunch of toys in front of the window to try to trap any intruders. Yeah, I was just very, I was a only child and very rambunctious and very imaginative and very... you know, I was a very precocious, I guess the word you would call kids like that back then. So I very much related to Kevin McAllister by feeling left alone. I was left a lot with my toys and my video games and all of that stuff. So it related a lot to him. So watch the movie constantly. And of course, there's those, you know, revisionist watching it as an adult and being like, you would have killed those intruders multiple times over. You would have murdered them. You would have maimed them. How Joe Pesci wasn't seriously injured with the flamethrower, you know, burning the top of his head. How the one guy didn't burn his hand, you know, singes his hand, get third degree burns on his hand. You know, when he grabbed the door handle. One of these movies that I because it straddles that line of like, you know. Now this movie would be something like, was it Silent Night, the one last year with the guy from Stranger Things playing Santa?
Violent Night.
Yeah, that's the 2022-2023 version of this movie. It's got to be something to do with magic, or it's got to be an actual killer, or it's got to be something. You know, people say you couldn't make this movie today, but you wouldn't find an audience, I think, is a better way to phrase that old overused phrase of you can't make this movie today.
Chestnut roasting over a fire, if you will.
Yeah. Oh, quick tangent about, you know, you couldn't make this today that I just heard. They were talking about Blazing Saddles, which is the big movie they always reference when they say they couldn't make this today. Blazing Saddles came out in 1974. was it Mel Brooks had a very, very hard time making that movie just in general. Finally got it made, finally got it distributed. During that same year, Richard Pryor, who was in that movie, was Richard Pryor in that movie? Am I thinking of somebody else?
No, Richard Pryor is not in that movie. You're okay. Racist.
No, but it is.
This guy's a black guy. He must be Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor was doing a bit or doing some sort of bit.
He's in a lot of other movies with Gene Wilder.
What I'm saying is, the same year that Blazing Saddles came out, Richard Pryor was not in that movie. But my point is, he was doing his performances, doing his, his routine, his stand-up routine. And he got arrested for obscenity, for doing whatever his bit was too obscene for a North Carolina crowd or South Carolina crowd. There is no North Carolina. You know what I'm saying? Some sort of Carolina. He was doing his routine and he got arrested that same year.
There is no North Carolina?
Is there North Carolina? There's North Carolina, South Carolina.
It's a
okay.
state. What are you talking about?
What's the one that's like there's a west but not an east?
Virginia.
Virginia, thank you. Okay. So he was in...
I was like, wait a minute. Like, I was like, are you trying to like...
Yeah.
Is this
there
like,
is
like,
no North Carolina. There is no...
His name was Robert Paulson.
There is no... What's from the 1984? There is no East Asia.
We were never at war.
Yeah,
exactly.
We were never at war with East Asia. Yeah. But anyways, my point was... People got arrested for obscenity. There were consequences and there was cancellation and there was actual repercussions for obscene language even back then. So that whole bullshit about you couldn't do this today is not true. You couldn't do that back then either.
It's...
yeah. So anyways, that was my number two.
Anyway, Christmas.
My number two. Derek, what's number two? Anyway,
all right.
Christmas.
My number two is yeah. My number two is one people might not be expecting, but I contend it is a Christmas movie, and it is a Christmas classic. And that is, it was released on Christmas Day, 2002, starring a Mr. Leonardo DiCaprio and a Mr. Tom Hanks, and that is Catch Me If You Can. And I know, and this movie, once again, all about the Christmas trappings of not having your family, not having anyone around, and just kind of looking for that found family. And this movie, that's all Leo's about. That's what both of these characters are going through. They're playing this cat and mouse game. And the whole movie isn't Christmas, but it's because it's set over multiple years. But whenever they talk to each other, whenever Carl and Frank talk to one another, it's always on Christmas. Every single Christmas they're talking. Every important, real important moment between these two characters who are really looking for a family, who at the end of it become a pseudo father and son, is always on Christmas. There's always the lights twinkling in the background, and the themes of Christmas are spread throughout it. It's just a great movie. It is really just a great one of the great like kind of cat and mouse espionage movies with a great John Williams score. And something else that this movie has that I think every good Christmas movie needs is a iconic use of a Christmas song. And I always think of, when I think of Christmas movies, one of the big scenes that plays in my mind always is that moment towards the end, and spoilers for Catch Me If You Can, but when Leo has escaped one final time, he's back in New York and he goes to see his mom. He's the only family he has left, and he looks in the window and looks like he's straight out of a Christmas card. It's this snowy New York Christmas, and he sees the lights and the tree, and this little girl comes up to him, and he realizes this is his sister that he never knew he had, and his mom has moved on, had this whole new family, and Nat King Cole is playing in the background, and he gets taken away, and it fades away, and then the movie ends though with another Christmas scene, them ending. So every moment that's really important in this movie is at Christmas. It's really a Christmas movie that has kind of slipped under the radar for everybody.
Yeah, it actually is. Like I said, with some of my other picks, one I definitely need to revisit, probably the Spielberg movie I haven't, probably one of the most well-received Spielberg movies I haven't revisited. I've revisited the least out of all his filmography. So yeah, definitely worth a revisit for me. So that was your number two, right? Yes, and again, just like with a few other picks, very, very chalk pick Christmas Story. The other Bob Clark movie you were referencing before when I was talking about Black Christmas. This came out in 83, so almost a decade after Black Christmas. Just want to see other things Bob Clark did. I'm just curious. Did Black Christmas?
He did My Summer Story, right?
Did he do My Summer Story? What is this? Oh, is that? Okay.
That's one of the five sequels. It's one of the five direct sequels that ignores the other four sequels to A Christmas Story.
Oh, interesting. So apparently it was based on, they're all based on semi-autobiographical stories by Gene Shepherd from a book called In God We Trust, mm-hmm. All Others Pay Cash. That's interesting. Let's see. Porky's, just all over the place. What the fuck? Porky's and Porky's 2, Murder by Decree. I've heard of that one. Sherlock Holmes movie. Interesting. Crazy. Anyways, Christmas Story. It is one of those movies that, on release, famously did not do well. According to Wikipedia, its budget was $3.3 million, made $19 million, which apparently is pretty good, made his money back, but was not a runaway hit. I believe sort of became a Christmas classic, a Christmas one of those after TNT I think started doing 24-hour marathons of it.
TBS
was it, yeah. TBS, okay. TBS did a 24-hour marathon,
yeah,
starting in the late 90s, I think early 2000s they did a 24-hour.
Yeah, they still do it.
Do they? Yeah.
It's one of those things my family just puts on. It's Christmas, let's throw on A Christmas Story and let it play in the background. It's like so episodic that it doesn't matter where you start the movie. It's like, oh, it's this scene, you know? And you're opening presents, a couple scenes go out, and you're like, oh, cool, it's there, they're at this point now. And then the movie starts over and you're like, oh, there's, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, just I don't know where it's supposed to take place, but it's gotta be somewhere in the Northeast. I think they said Cleveland at one point. Looks like Wikipedia has it as Cleveland. But yeah, just, that feeling of, because I was, grew up in, early 90s, but it was a very old house. It had a boiler just like this house had. My dad was always fucking with the boiler. He was always showing me how to bring up the water level, bring down the water level as you need to. But yeah, he was, my dad had me when he was 45, and so that was in 85, so he was born in 1940. The movie takes place, I believe, in 1940, so, but he was, he grew up a few years after that, so essentially the same sort of time period. So a lot of this stuff we definitely bonded over. I would ask him questions like, is this accurate? Did you actually sit around the radio listening to, what was her name? I know it was like some show.
Little Orphan Annie?
Little Orphan Annie. Thank you. Yes. Did you actually sit around listening to the radio instead of playing video games? What were you even doing? How could you live without video games back then? Did you get bored out of your mind? So we definitely, bonded over that. I would definitely ask him questions about his life growing up in the 40s and 50s and things like that. So, just a great thing to go back and not even think about the memories of watching this movie, the memories you had of your house watching this movie, but also the people you watched it with and the sort of bonds you forged while watching the movie is something I always think about when I watch this movie. So yeah, Christmas Story, great classic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm curious, it's, as people are listening, theoretically this is Christmas Day.
Yeah.
I wonder how many letterbox logs I've gotten on this movie on Christmas. I'm sure I'm gonna be like, oh, it just started over again, click. Mark another one.
This might be, if I was able to sort of like surgically or mechanically or somehow to go in and be like, how many movies, how many times did I rewatch this? How many times did I rewatch the one I just talked about, Home Alone? How many times did I rewatch Batman Returns? It would probably be in the dozens, at least, in the dozens times that I've rewatched this movie over the years. So yeah. One of the best. What is your number one Christmas movie, Derek?
Yeah, so my list, has been, there's been some less traditional Christmas movies. There's been one movie that people don't even think of as Christmas, but it really is. There's been a Christmas movie that's, very underrated. But for number one, I've got to go with a classic Christmas staple. And what's more of a Christmas staple than the Christmas story that, like, invented Christmas stories, essentially?
Jesus.
The man who invented Christmas. No, not Jesus. Charles Dickens. And yeah, so there's a lot of options I could have gone with for Christmas, a Christmas Carol movie.
Yeah.
There's so many good ones. One I'm very partial to is Scrooged, but
yes,
I don't think for my money you can beat one of my favorite movies of all time and my number one Christmas movie of all time, and that is Muppet's Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
This movie is so much fun. It's a movie that I will want to watch every single Christmas. They really, like, the Dickensian stuff works so well with the Muppets. You know, there was that time period when the Muppets were taking all these classic pieces of literature and like just having iconic British actors in them. And Michael Caine as Scrooged,
yeah,
is so good. Like, he's phenomenal. And then, you know, you've got Kermit as Bob Cratchit and coming to know me better, man. Like, the Ghosts of Christmas Past. And it's what you want to watch at Christmas. It's delightful. It fills your heart with Christmas cheer. There's great, like, Christmas song. Like, it's a musical. There's great Christmas songs throughout it. It's all about that family Christmas stuff. He learns at the end to, like love his fellow man because the Christmas joy has come to him. And he goes to his only family's house, his nephew, and celebrates with him. You know, and who doesn't love the goddamn Muppets? You know, they're the best. Gonzo as Charles Dickens, you know, with Rizzo there with him, you know, what's not to love about this movie? If I want to feel like it's Christmas, this is the movie that I put on.
Yeah, exactly. Trying to find the quote. What's the Rizzo quote about, like, the light? He's lighting one of the lanterns, right? Trying to find... lantern something, light the lamp. Oh yeah, light the lamp, not the rat. Yeah, light the lamp, not the rat. Put me up.
Oh,
put
yes, me out. Yes. We're Marley and Marley. Oh, like,
apparently
a lot of iconic moments in this one.
Yeah. directed by Brian Henson, son of Jim Henson.
Yeah, dedicated to Jim Henson. I think is the first Muppets movie that came out after he passed away.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Sir Michael Caine said to
Michael Caine said to
Brian Henson, "I'm going to play this movie like I'm working with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I will never wink. I will never do anything Muppety. I'm going to play Scrooge as if it's an utterly dramatic role, and there are no Muppets around me." Henson replied, "Yes, bang on." Bang on. Okay. All right.
And that's why it's so good, because he, like, I saw this thing that it's so perfect. It perfectly summarizes both of these performances, and it's why they work so well. It's like that Michael Caine works because he treats the Muppets like fellow actors.
Yes.
And in Muppet Treasure Island, Tim Curry works because he sees himself as a fellow Muppet.
Yes, true. Exactly.
Caine is so good. Like, he's the best Scrooge. And there have been some great iconic, usually British, like, knights, you know, sirs, all these great actors who've played Scrooge, but, like, nobody gets it quite as right as Sir Michael Caine, you know?
Yes, exactly. So that is our top five Christmas movies. Write in if you agree or disagree with our top five. Write in any ones we might have missed. Write in your favorite Christmas movie to The Midnight Film Society at gmail.com. So with that, we'll go to
honorable mentions for you?
Honorable mentions, yes.
Honorable?
Any, like you said, Scrooged, fantastic take on A Christmas Carol, one of the best, you know, modern versions of that. Love Bill Murray in that. I did a Christmas Vacation versus Scrooge. We had a segment of the show called Movie Cage Match. We'd pit two movies against each other and see who would vote for which one. And so we rewatched that one for that year. And let me just pull up my list from that year just to see how it compared real quick. Let's see. Top five Christmas movies. So my number five from 2019 was It's a Wonderful Life. My number four was Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, even though that's a Thanksgiving movie.
That's a Thanksgiving movie.
Nobody called me out on that. And the other three were just in a different order. Batman Returns, Christmas Story, and Home Alone were in different orders there. So, yeah, pretty much the same. Scrooge. Yeah. Scrooge is fantastic reimagining of that. Yeah. It was a very cool sort of idea, very meta idea of having him be a TV executive and putting on a Christmas Carol, then interrupting it at the end there. Trading Places is one I think is a untraditional Christmas movie, if I want to say that, say it like that. But you know, it takes place during Christmas time, has Christmas themes to it, of understanding your fellow man and such. So that's a great one there for honorable mention. And The Santa Claus is another one I watched with the now current problematic Tim Allen and the unfortunate and unnecessary, is it a TV remake they're doing? Like a couple, they have a second season now. I saw.
It's like a TV show. Yeah, I think it's season two.
The Santa Clauses.
With like Juliet from Lost is, they brought back everybody from those old movies.
Yeah, that seems unnecessary and unfortunate, and I pray for the souls of everyone involved in that. So yeah, but the first one, great movie, great Christmas movie for me. How about you? Any honorable mentions for you?
I've got quite a few, and I really had a tough time narrowing it down to five because I was like, dang, there's so many I wanted to put on the list. Like we said at the top, I just watched Carol, which I thought was a phenomenal movie, but it's not, and it does have a lot of Christmas stuff in it, but they get past Christmas. I consider it almost more of a New Year's movie. Much like The Apartment, I think those are more New Year's movies than Christmas movies because the big moments happen at New Year's. A lot of Christmas is only in the beginning. The Holiday kind of covers all of the holidays.
Yeah.
Christmas, Hanukkah, New Year's. That's a really good one. It was on my list for a while. I eventually bumped it. A more recent one, The Holdovers.
Yeah.
That's a very just great film about being lonely at Christmas. Scrooged, of course, like I mentioned. I mentioned The Green Knight, which I really wanted to put on my list. It's a very different kind of Christmas movie that, it's older holiday traditions. And I think it's weird and great. And David Lowery's amazing. Gremlins, of course.
Yeah.
I can't believe I haven't even mentioned Gremlins yet, going through this whole Christmas podcast. That's a really phenomenal dark Christmas movie. Elf is great.
Yeah.
Elf is phenomenal. Will Ferrell just plays on all the old Christmas tropes from all those old Rankin Bass movies.
Yeah.
Nightmare Before Christmas, another great Christmas musical. Holiday mashup, you'll love to see it.
Yeah.
Tim Burton again, Christmas. I think the original, the short 30-minute version of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, really, really good. And mentioned it before, one that it's maybe not the best movie, it doesn't hold up, but it has a special place in my heart in the same way that, even though they're both bad movies, Goonies has a place in your heart. And that is Jingle All the Way. Jamie and the Turbo Man and all that. And then I'll add one more to the list. This is the other one I watched in addition to Carol, thinking like, oh, is this a Christmas classic? And I considered putting it on my list for a while. And I might even need to stew on it more. But I just watched a couple nights ago, Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
That is a great movie. That is just
fantastic.
A great Christmas movie.
Fantastic.
It's very Christmassy. I was not expecting it to be like that much, have Christmas aesthetics, but it's like, yeah, this is very much set at Christmas. And it's about family and
well,
Kidman wanting to fuck a guy in the Navy.
Yeah, it's probably one of, if not the, would you say it's the darkest Christmas movie?
It's
got to be up there, right?
Maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there's some foreign Christmas movies I'm not thinking of, but yeah, it's probably up there in terms of, yes, definitely a Christmas movie, but not a whole lot of laughs, not a whole lot of jingle bells at all, any of that stuff.
There's a lot of Christmas trees, a lot of Christmas lights,
yes.
Undisputably
a Christmas movie, but yeah, probably one of the bleakest out there. So yeah, is it all your list? Because I wanted to ask you about
walking around through the snow.
I wanted to ask you about one they talked about on Letterboxd this week, the Letterboxd podcast. Highly recommend checking that out if you haven't. Mm-hmm. They were talking the entire show about Love Actually. I don't know if that's the major list at all, if you had thought about that.
I actually haven't seen it.
Oh, wow.
And I was going to, it was going to be back in theaters, and I had plans to watch it the same day I was going to watch Die Hard, but then they canceled the showing to put one random showing in the middle of the day of Oppenheimer.
Oh, Jesus.
And I was like, this movie came out in August. Why is Oppenheimer in the theater? Yeah. It's weird. So I didn't get to see it. And I was like, I wasn't about to watch it at home by myself. So
yeah, I believe the general consensus. When I say general consensus, I just mean, you know, most right-thinking people. No, I mean, you know, if you ask most people, you'll probably get the answer of, yeah, it's not a good movie, but I still enjoy it. You know, it's not a good movie for the
So it's an Aquaman. Aquaman, The Lost Kingdom.
Well, it's Aquaman. If Aquaman was offensive to obese people, to gay people, to trans people, so it's one of those. You can just sort of go back and be like, yep, we've come a long way since then.
So it's J.K. Rowling's favorite movie.
Exactly. So that was all of our honorable mentions for Christmas movies. Just to do a couple things before we get to Letterboxd assignments. Movies we are still yet to see. I pulled up my list of award contenders I still have to see for 2023/24. I have 42 movies on here. I've seen 16% of them. I've seen 7 out of 42. I thought I would make a lot more progress than I have, apparently. I don't know if you have a similar list on your letterbox, but I'm just going to go through a couple of mine.
I don't.
You don't? Okay. First one is Evil Does Not Exist. This is probably going to be like the Drive My Car of this year for multiple different reasons. This is the new Ryusuke Hamaguchi film. But it's also one I cannot find anywhere. Haven't seen a showing. Haven't seen any possibility of a digital release anytime soon. So this will probably be one of those we'll talk about like next March at this point. But I'm definitely looking forward to it. Zone of Interest, obviously, the Jonathan Glazer movie. Can't wait to see that at some point. American Fiction, the Cord Jefferson movie that Sean Fantasy talked about recently. One of the big ones that people are talking about is the Andrew Haig movie, All of Us Strangers. Still very much want to check that out before we do our Best of the Year show. The Wim Wenders film Perfect Days is one that I'm very much looking forward to seeing. Sean Durkin's Iron Claw. Sean Durkin did The Nest from 2020, somewhere around there. He did Marceline. What the fuck? Let me look it up.
Marceline.
Have you seen this movie, Mary May Marlene?
No.
Marlene. Do you have no idea what I'm talking about? Do you?
I've heard that name. Like it's one of those things I've like heard like on movie podcasts, but yeah. I don't know what it is.
Martha Marcy May Marlene from 2021 stars Elizabeth Olsen, John Hawkes, and Hugh Dancy. One of his first movies. I think it's one of his three feature films from Sean Durkin. He has Iron Claw, obviously, out now. I'll see that tomorrow. Aki Kaurismäki's Fallen Leaves, I heard, is a very somber and like a, what do you call it? Who's that director? Like a Jim Jarmusch film, but he's like Swedish. So Swedish, if you can imagine a Swedish Jim Jarmusch movie, it's like that. Pablo Larraín has a new movie out this year called El Conde. Okay. Yeah.
Very specific.
It is very specific. He has a new movie out called El Conde, again, about Augusto Pinochet, which he's made a movie about before. Two more. I got Tran Hang Hong's The Taste of Things, which I heard is very good, starring Juliette Binoche. Can't wait to see that. And one more. Oh, no, sorry, that was the last one. Any movies you are looking forward to, and also thinking that it will be added to your Best of the Year list before we reconvene in a couple weeks here.
Well, you know, you mentioned I still need to see Maestro and Poor Things.
Yes.
I still need to see those. I've watched the five movies that you said that I haven't watched, that I need, the best movies I haven't seen this year. I've watched four of them. I just have Beau Is Afraid left.
Oh, do you want to talk about that? Talk about that real quick. the Running the Sun.
What
did you see? Did you talk about Running the Sun since we last talked?
I didn't talk. I didn't even like think it was worth mentioning on my list. I didn't care about it so much. I thought it was so. I don't know, man. So, what genre would you say Rotting in the Sun is?
Cinema verite. It was that phrase I was trying to think of when we talked last time. Can I define it? No, but I know it's that. Let me look it up real quick. Tell me about it. Tell me about seeing penises flopping
like,
about.
The genres I heard described as, yeah, were comedy and thrillers. And I was like, well, it's not comedic, nor is it thrilling. And they're like, oh, it's a murder mystery. I'm like, well, the death is not actually a murder, and there's nothing the audience is, there's no mystery. We see it, exactly what happens. And I don't know. I just was like, it felt like this guy had only seen two movies, one of which was maybe like Burn After Reading, and one of which was gay pornography. And you know, which is fine. I'm not knocking gay pornography if you like to watch it. It's not my thing.
No.
So I don't need to see lots of penises and going into buttholes.
Wow.
Constantly.
That's very homophobic.
There's a lot of unstimulated. No, it is not, David. There's a lot of unstimulated sex in this movie. There's a lot of unstimulated sex. And I was like, that's a choice. And I don't know. It was like, it felt like it was like, thought it was so fucking smart. And it's like, it's just like, it's like, wow, we're all on our phones and you know, like, dude, it's just like, shut the fuck up.
Kids and their phones these days.
I hated this
kids
movie.
With their phones.
I fucking hated this movie. So, I thought it was so fucking smart. It's like, yeah, I don't know, man. Like, cool, great, you know, whatever. Fucking whatever.
Cinema verite.
I hated
French,
this movie. It was one of my
go ahead.
Bottom five movies.
Wasn't a topper five. You're a bottom
no.
five. Cinema verite is French for truthful cinema. The style of documentary filmmaking developed by Edgar Morin and Jean Rauch, inspired by Diego Vertaz's theory about Kino Brava. It combines improvisation with use of the camera to unveil truth or highlight subjects hidden behind reality. It is sometimes called observational cinema. So, yeah.
So it's mumblecore.
Sure, yeah.
It just sounds like a more pretentious version of mumblecore. That sounds like.
Did you prefer Mr. What was the guy in Saltburn? Did you prefer his floppy wiener to random men's floppy wieners? Or do you prefer actors' floppy wieners? Just because they're strangers' floppy wieners doesn't mean they're invalid.
Floppy wieners weren't the issue. That was not the issue. It's weird that you think that the floppy wieners was the issue. I know that was a draw for you.
Yes, yeah,
but like
wieners,
it
yep.
wasn't like you were like, please, all the wieners.
Did you watch?
No, I.
Did you watch another weird movie called Mad God, which was your letterbox assignment from last time?
Yes.
You did. Okay, what'd you think?
That
of
was
this?
Very weird too. Yes. Also, yeah, you know, no. that movie was more disturbing, I think, there you go. That was a movie that
right.
the floppy wieners not that repulsive to me. You know, gay unsimulated sex. You know, not something I'd choose to watch.
Sure.
But like, you know, I'm not like repulsed by
sure.
it. Mad God is a repulsive, disgusting movie that is not fun to watch. And it's you know, I like Phil Tippett
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah.
I think he's a genius. But this is just Phil Tippett playing with his toy for 2 hours. And you're seeing a lot of like excrement and like disgusting, like disturbing things happen where it's just like there's so much shit in this movie. There's like more shit in this movie than every Adam Sandler movie. It's insane.
Yeah, I mean it's his, you know, it's raw Tippett. It's the raw
Tippett.
Just the Tippett. Yeah. You know, this is what you get when a filmmaker has no restraints. Yeah, that's the thing that what's the thing called? The id, the super id, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The id, the ego, and
it's
the super ego.
Weird,
it's all
man.
Of that.
It's so fucking weird.
It's very weird.
It's like, I was like, what am I watching?
But, you know, we need weird, you know, everything can't be, everything shouldn't be super digestible. I like this movie in the same way I liked, there was one called.
Yeah, but you liked Skinamarink.
Yes, I did. I did. Well,
that's a movie where literally nothing happens.
I like. let me be clear. Just like Mr. Obama used to say, they are things that I enjoy seeing. Okay, let's go with that route. I like seeing them because Skidamarink and Mad God and what's the other one I was going to mention? Something of the Wolf. The Wolf House. It's another stop motion animated movie that's very disturbing. You know, I just like seeing these things. I like knowing they exist because it means that there is still a possibility and still a route and it's still a way for filmmakers that want to make weird shit. And I'm glad they have an outlet and I'm glad they have, you know, distribution. I'm glad they have the resources to be able to make the stuff, you know?
Yeah, yes, that's cool. Sort I just of. Was just like, what is it saying?
No, and
I didn't.
No, I mean, is it, do you agree? It's good that they have the ability to make the stuff, even though it's not your thing.
Yeah.
For you. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I'm glad that Phil Tippett got to play with his toys for 2 hours.
Okay, all right.
I love Phil Tippett. Right. He's great.
All right.
That's what it was, Damien. It was Phil Tippett like being like, oh, what if I made this weird shit? You're like, go for it, man.
Okay.
Have fun. Like, all right. I don't think it's like incredible cinema or anything. It's just like, yeah, you're cool.
Yeah.
Special effects, you know,
special
whatever.
Special effects,
it's fun.
All right. So,
you know, it's no different than Avatar. It's James Cameron playing with his toys for 2 hours. They're just different toys.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. Yeah. So let's do a spinneroonie for next year, I guess, because we'll be doing the best of the show, best of the year show next time. So in a month.
Yeah, we're skipping this for the next show. This will be the one after that.
Yeah, 1 month from now.
Okay.
We will be reviewing whatever you watch here. I did skip over mine because I did not have 3 hours. Well, I had 3 hours. What am I talking about? I had 3 hours. I chose not to watch the my assignment. The Green Mile from last time, but I definitely will check it out at some point because I got
you chose not to. Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was like looking at my time ticking down until this podcast as I'm playing Tarkov, and I was like, I should be watching my stuff. I feel bad. I beat Ganondorf this week. I don't just walk around and be like, ha ha hee hee. I'm so glad I'm going to disappoint my friend Derek. I'm not happy about it. I have feelings. And I feel feelings. Anyways, let me go to my shuffle list, my watch list. I'm going to hit shuffle because I can pretty much watch anything right now. I guess I will be watching Evil Dead, the Fede Alvarez 2013 remake.
Oh, that's a good movie.
Yeah, I've heard it is a good movie, so I will be checking that out for next time. The second, do you know what the second one next to that was? Das Boot. It's a like a 4 hour,
Das Boot.
4 hour, 5 hour thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
German submarine movie or whatever.
Yeah, apparently Letterboxd has it 150 minutes. I feel like that whenever everybody talks about this movie, it's always
there's like a director's cut.
Yeah,
there's a director's cut that's like much longer.
Das Boot.
It's like one of the first director's cut movies that like really clicked.
Yeah, Wolfgang Peterson. Yep. So what I'll be watching at least Evil Dead in a month from now. Derek, go to your watch list and shuffle that baby, and let me know what you get.
Give it an old spinnerooski. Boom, 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 boom. And all right, I got Sabrina, the original one.
Oh, nice.
The Hepburn version from 1954, directed by my guy, Billy Wilder.
Nice, very cool. So you'll be checking that out for next time. So before we go, let's do some plugging. Let me check my follower list real quick, just so I have a accurate, up-to-date follower list. I have 254 followers, so that means I'm 46 away from 300. Get me to 300. That'd be cool. Film Essayist on YouTube. Go to Spotify for podcasters. Make a podcast very easily. Go back and listen to all of my interviews. B.R. Yeager, Cinema Tech. And go back this year on the feed. Dee and I broke down Succession Season 4, the season series finale. We broke down pretty much every episode of that season and did an in-depth breakdown of The Bear Season 2. Two great shows. Maybe we'll talk. Maybe we'll do I'll do a blog post, or maybe we'll do – maybe be me and Dee and or you and I will do a – you know, a little bit of television talk before the end of the year. So look forward to that. And so, yeah, what'd you catch your plug, Derek?
My plug is my show, Underrated. Just look up Underrated Film, or excuse me, Underrated Movie Podcast, anywhere, whatever app you're listening to this on, or YouTube, or any of the socials, Underrated Movie Podcast, and it'll come up. That's where every other week I break down a movie that deserves more love, for whatever reason. This is going to be the last week where that release of that show lines up the release of this show. They're going to be staggered going forward, starting on Christmas or starting on New Year's Day. But for this, the Christmas episode we did, I covered with a Cozy Christmas podcast, Art from a Cozy Christmas podcast. I covered Anna in the Apocalypse, which is a Christmas zombie musical. So that one was a lot of fun. Didn't quite make my top five Christmas movies, but I really enjoyed it. So look that up everywhere. I think you guys will get a lot of fun listening to that. And I've got, of course, the Patreon, patreon.com/underratedmoviepodcast. And yeah, going forward now, next week, me and Damien cut up Spider-Man 3. and despite me, Damien, not understanding the premise of the show Underrated, I had a lot of fun with that episode.
Is that the premise? The premise?
So now every other week. The premise is, yeah, we talk about underrated movies and, you know, why they deserve a little more love. And you were just like this movie sucks. I fucking hate this movie. And I was like, okay, well, maybe let's talk about the the editor's cut. And you're like, didn't do that.
You present. I thought the premise was you present a movie that you think is underrated, and the other person comes out and tells you why it's not underrated. I thought there was like a
have you
competing
listened
thing.
To the show ever? It's never, literally never happened.
Have I listened to the show? Moving on. let's see. So that'll drop the first, you said, that the underrated, our underrated talk of Spider-Man 3 will drop on New Year's Day. I remember that because you mentioned it like three times and I forgot three times during the show.
Forgot it twice.
Okay. It's like, Happy New Year, everybody. So get that on New Year's Day today. You know,
and it's coming out on this feed too, right?
This feed, yes. Yeah, well, that was going to be a secret. I thought that was going to be a present I was going to deliver to the people the first. No, it's
Let's
fine.
Let's cut it out. We'll cut that part out.
Click cut. What was I going to say? Yeah, if you're listening to this on Christmas Day, using this podcast to hide from your hateful and misogynistic and racist relatives, you're hiding in the bathroom listening to us. Unfortunately, you have to hit stop or move on to something else. You have to go back to your shitty family. I'm sorry for that. I did want to say thank you, Derek, for coming to the show. Thank you for a wonderful year. Thank you for all the stuff you bring to the show. It'd be much worse show without you, because it would just be me rambling into a microphone. I listened to a show I did earlier this year, or maybe it was like a couple of years ago before you came on, and like it was like a revolving door where Deanna was sort of leaving and I did a show by myself, and it was terrible. I can do it. I don't know if you listened to that show, but I can do it.
I did. I remember that, because it was like I was on, and then like the next week you were alone, and it was before like it was just a guest at that point.
Yes.
And I remember that.
Yes, this show would be
but thank you. I thank you for having me on and letting me be a part of the show, because I always have a blast doing it and getting the chance to talk about new movies, more popular films I would not be able to talk about on Underrated.
Yeah, more popular movies, and also Hangin' Dong. You just get to talk about Hangin' Dong and Bad God and some weird movies that I have to assign to you. Yes. So with that, I have Damien.
And I've been Derek.
For the Midnight Film Society 2023, we'll see you next year. Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Happy all that stuff.
Happy Hanukkah. Happy Kwanzaa. Yep. And a happy new year.
To you.